Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We are talking about book one, chapter eight, the first half of the chapter. Last night's episode was particularly late, and today's episode is particularly early. So they're quite close together. Apologies for that. All the same, the discussion prompt was, Julian has refused Eliza. Laura Weistich said, Julian became slightly less unlikable in this chapter, at least for a moment, when he cried in the woods because no one had ever cared about him before. I understood why he is so bitter. I hope he gets over it. He is only 18 after all. Yeah, I suppose, like, when you think 18, he's a bit of, I was going to say know-it-all, not quite a, not, that's not exactly the word for him though. It's more like, what's the word? That age where you're so confident that you are holier than thou kind of thing. I don't know, there's a word. I remember once I read a fridge magnet that said, it said like happy 16th birthday or something like that. Quick, move out while you still know everything, or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. It gives me that kind of feeling though. Like he's too stubborn. He's very stubborn, but it's that very much that young man stubbornness of when you've just sort of been deemed a grown up and you've got a bit of a chip on your shoulder about insisting that you are one. But then to see him kind of break down in a woods and cry humanizes him a lot. And he does have a valid excuse for his bitterness because he's been so mistreated. So, yeah, I can see that. There's a human side to him. Al Treat said, be careful, my son, this is a quote from the chapter, of what's happening in your heart. I have a troubled glimpse deep down of a dark ambition which does not speak to me of the temperance, the perfect surrender of worldly advantages, which a priest must have. I see good things in your spirit, but permit me to tell you, added the good old man, tears in his eyes, for you as a priest, I tremble for your salvation. He used the same phrases as a fervent young seminarian might have employed, but the tone with which he spoke them and the badly hidden light burning in his eyes worried Father Chelan. Oh man, says Altreat, am I hearing this right? Grave danger, Father Chelan fears in his training. Such strong Anakin / Yoda vibes. I really like the Father Chelan character. I don't know if there's much of a role for him in this book, but he seems like good people. Looking out for the poor and the incarcerated, giving difficult counsel to his student, standing up to the wealthy power elite. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that Julian's insinuations against Eliza are unforgivable, but, well, a new height, a new low of dickishness, that's for sure. And there's a link to a picture of Dark Sith Lord Anakin there, which I very much appreciate. He could go to the dark side. He could go there. Pain, suffering. Let's continue reading. That's my Yoda impression. Where are we? We're halfway through chapter 8. After breakfast the next day, Madame de Renal gave herself the delicious indulgence of pleading her rival's cause and of hearing Eliza's hand and fortune consistently refused for an hour. Gradually, Julian went beyond making constrained answers and ended by replying with spirit to Madame de Renal's prudent arguments. She could not resist the torrent of happiness which flooded her soul after so many days of despair. She found herself ill indeed. When she was recovered and safely established in her own room, she sent everyone away. She was deeply disturbed. Could I be in love with Julian? She asked herself at last. This discovery, which at any other time would have plunged her into remorse and profound agitation, was now, for her, nothing but a strange spectacle, and indeed one to which she was indifferent. Her spirit, exhausted by all that she had been through, could find no further resources of sensibility to fuel her passions. Madame de Renal wished to work, but fell into a deep slumber. When she awoke, she wasn't as alarmed as she should have been. She was too happy to be able to take anything badly. Naive and innocent, this excellent provincial woman had never tortured her spirit in the attempt to wring out a little sensibility from some novel refinement of feeling or of melancholy. Completely absorbed before Julian's coming by the mass of work that away from Paris is the lot of a good mother of a family, Madame de Renal thought of the passions as we think of the lottery. Certainly a delusion, and a reward sought by fools. The dinner bell rang. Madame de Renal blushed deeply when she heard Julian's voice as he led in the children. A little more cunning since being in love, she explained her colouring by complaining of a terrible headache. Typical woman, replied Monsieur de Renal with a great laugh. There's always something to put right with those particular machines. Although she was used to this sort of wit, her husband's tone of voice shocked Madame de Renal. To distract herself, she studied Julian's physiognomy. If he had been the ugliest of men, he would have pleased her at that moment. Careful to imitate the habits of the people at court, Monsieur de Renal moved to Vergy in the first fine days of spring. This is the village made famous by the tragic career of Gabrielle. A few hundred paces from the wonderfully picturesque ruins of an ancient Gothic church, Monsieur de Renal possessed an old chateau with four turrets and a garden designed like that of the Tuileries, with an abundance of box borders and alleys of chestnuts pruned twice a year. A neighbouring field planted with apple trees served as a place to stroll. 8 or 10 magnificent walnut trees stood at the end of the orchard. Their massive foliage rose to a height of perhaps 80 feet. Each of those damn walnuts, said Mr. de Renal, when his wife admired them, cost me half an acre's produce. Corn cannot grow under their shade. The sight of the countryside was as if new to Madame de Renal. Her admiration for it was close to rapture. The emotion with which she was filled gave her intelligence and resolution. 2 days after their arrival at Vergy, Monsieur de Renal having returned to town on mayoral business, Madame de Renal hired some workers at her own expense. Julian had given her the idea of a little sanded path which would go around in the orchard and under the great walnuts, allowing the children to walk in the morning without getting their shoes soaked with dew. This idea was put into execution less than 24 hours after having been conceived. Madame de Renal passed the whole day lightheartedly with Julian directing the workers. When the mayor of Verrières returned from town, he was much surprised to find the alley complete. His arrival surprised Madame de Renal also. She had forgotten his existence. For 2 months, he spoke, with irritation of the rashness involved in having carried out so important a betterment without consulting him, but was somewhat comforted by the fact that it had been done at Madame de Renal's own expense. She spent her days romping with the children in the orchard and chasing butterflies, large nets of clear gay gauze had been made, with which one caught the poor lepidopters. That was the barbarous name, Julian thought, Madame de Renal, for she had Monsieur Godard's fine work sent from Besancon, and Julian told her the strange habits of these poor creatures. Sorry about my bad reading today. I'm all over the place. Oh, brain is offline. They were pitilessly transfixed with pins onto a large square of cardboard also set up by Julian, At last there was a subject of conversation between Madame de Renal and Julien. He was no longer exposed to the frightful torment that periods of silence gave him. They talked to each other endlessly, with very great interest, though always about the most innocent topics. This active life, busy and cheerful, was to everyone's taste except that of Mademoiselle Eliza, who found herself overwhelmed with work. Not even during the carnival, she said, when there is a ball at Verrières, does Madame take so much trouble over her dress. She changes her outfit two or three times a day. Since our intention is to flatter no one, we cannot really deny that Madame de Renal, who had marvellous skin, arranged to wear dresses which left her arms and neck much exposed. She was beautifully formed, and this way of presenting herself was ravishing. "You have never been so young, madam," said her Verrières friends, coming to dine at Vergy. This is a local phrase. The strange thing, which among us will scarcely be believed, is that Madame de Renal took such pains with her dress without any deliberate object. She took pleasure in it, and without her thinking much about it, all the time not spent chasing butterflies with Julien and her children was devoted to working with Eliza on her wardrobe. Her single journey to Verrières was the result of a desire to buy some of the new summer dresses arrived from Mulhouse. She brought back to Vergy a young man who was related to her. Since her marriage, Madame de Renal had insensibly become an intimate of Madame d'Urville, who before that had been her companion at the Sacred Heart. Madame d'Urville laughed a great deal at what she called her cousin's wild ideas. "By myself, I'd never think of that," she would say. When she was in the company of her husband, Madame de Renal was ashamed of these unforeseen ideas, which in Paris would call witticisms. But Madame d'Urville's presence gave her the courage of them. At first, she spoke her thoughts in a tentative manner. When the ladies were alone together for a long time, Madame de Renal's wit was enlivened, and a long solitary morning would pass in an instant and leave the two friends full of gaiety. In this visit, the shrewd Madame d'Urville found her cousin much less vivacious, but much happier. Julien, on his side, had lived like a real child since his stay in the country, as happy to run around chasing butterflies with his pupils as they were, after so much constraint and cunning manoeuvring alone, far from the observation of men, and by instinct not at all afraid of Madame de Renal. He gave himself up to the pleasure of existence, so powerful at that age, and in the midst of the most beautiful mountains in the world. From the moment of Madame d'Urville's arrival, Julien felt that she was his friend. He was quick to show her the view from the end of the new path under the great walnut trees. In truth, it is equal, if not superior, to the best that the Swiss or Italian lakes can offer. If one climbs the steep slope, which starts a few paces away, one soon comes to deep precipices bordered with woods of oak that reach down almost to the river. It was to the summits of these sheer rocks that Julien, happy, free, and even something better, the king of his castle, led the two friends and rejoiced in their admiration of the sublime views. "For me, it is like Mozart's music," said Madame d'Urville. The jealousy of his brothers, the presence of a despotic father full of ill temper, had spoiled the countryside around Verrières for Julien. At Vergy, there were no such bitter associations. For the first time in his life, there was no enemy to be seen. When Monsieur de Renal was back in the town, which often happened, he dared to read soon instead of reading at night, and even then having to be careful to hide his lamp beneath an upturned vase. He was able to give himself over to slumber in the daytime in the interval between the children's lessons. He went to those rocks with the volume, which was the sole ruler of his conduct and the object of his rapture. In it he found at once happiness, ecstasy, and consolation in times of discouragement. Certain things that Napoleon said about women, numerous discussions, and the merits of fashionable novels in his region gave him then, for the first time, some ideas that any other young man of his age would have had long before. The intense summer heats came around, They got into the habit of spending the evenings under an immense lime tree a few feet from the house. Beneath it, the darkness was profound. One evening, Julian was speaking energetically, rejoicing with delight in the pleasure of talking well, and in front of two young women, in gesticulating, he touched Madame de Renal's hand, which was resting on the back of one of those painted chairs that were put in gardens. The hand was very quickly withdrawn, but Julian conceived that it was his duty to ensure that his hand be not withdrawn when he touched it. The idea of a duty to accomplish and of ridicule, or rather a feeling of inferiority, to endure if one did not succeed in doing it, banished all pleasure from his heart on the spot. All right. Sniffly. Apologies for that reading and all the sniffling. Have your say about that chapter over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.